Aloha lava, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Suisuki. Coming up,
we're mindful of our very old, our very young, our pregnant women as well.
Visitors heading to Samoa are urged to be vigilant in the face of dengue fever. Also,
men suppress their issues because they've been taught that they need to just deal with it.
A lecturer looks into the root causes of family violence and...
Both teams will be gunning for the win. It can help us in our goal to try and achieve, which is making the top eight.
Pacifica rugby teams face off in this weekend's matches. As dengue fever cases in Samoa continue to rise, the Ministry of Health are urging locals and tourists alike to be vigilant and take precautions. An outbreak was declared on Friday as over 80 cases were reported in the first 2 weeks of April. Tiana Haxton has more.
Dengue fever is a viral infection that spreads from mosquitoes to humans. Symptoms include high fevers, fatigue, muscle and joint pain, and rashes. With cases on the rise, Samoa's Ministry of Health is urging households to look out for their high-risk family members. The Acting Director General of Health, Atoa Dr. Glenn Fatsubaito, says they are keeping a close eye on those that may face complications.
But we're mindful of our very old, our very young, our pregnant women as well. We don't want any complications. Yeah, and if you're sick, the supportive treatment, bed rest, lots of fluids, paracetamol, and come see a doctor if things are getting worse.
The ministry has launched a clean-up campaign encouraging households to empty stagnant water sources, wear clothing that will cover exposed skin to minimise mosquito bites, and use mosquito nets and repellents. Dr. Fatupaito says some pot plant species have been identified as popular mosquito breeding grounds.
One thing that was also discussed was choice of plants. People love bromeliads, especially in Samoa. If you're going to plant such plants, you know, keep it at least 100 yards from your household and to reduce potential breeding grounds for mosquitoes.
Meanwhile, there's been no official travel advisory regarding the outbreak, but visitors are reminded to have medical and travel insurance policies that include a provision for medical evacuation by air. Professor in Infectious Diseases, Dr. Mark Thomas, says the last outbreak in Samoa 6 years ago resulted in 5 fatalities. He is urging travellers to follow all health recommendations and invest in good repellents.
And there's various different repellents available, but ones that have a reasonably high concentration of a substance that's abbreviated DEET, D-E-E-T, tend to be among the best insect repellents.
Samoa's Ministry of Health will begin publishing weekly updates and recommendations this Friday onwards.
A Pacific lecturer completing her master's degree in social work is diving into a thesis addressing the misinterpretation and misuse of biblical scriptures to gain power and control in relation to family violence. New Zealand is ranked as the worst developed country in the OECD for family violence. Genevieve Sang-Yum is of Samoan and Chinese heritage and has run family violence programs for Māori and Pasifika female victims and perpetrators. She says she's concerned by the growing number of Pasifika men who migrate to New Zealand and have used Bible verses to justify committing acts of domestic violence against their partners. Alicia Foon spoke with Genevieve Sang-Yum about her work in helping men reframe how they view scripture instead of weaponizing it to justify violence within families.
Hearing men address certain parts of the Bible, such as God created a woman from the rib of a man, we delve deep into having an open conversation about what that means to each of them. And the common response that came from the group was that because her role is to bear children and to help him to do what she, you know, she's meant to be doing. And so when you pull that text out and highlight the word partnership, it shifts their thinking in terms of understanding what that interpretation of that specific text actually means. And I link that text to the equality wheel, that which is the wheel that was developed by the team at Duluth, Minnesota, and talk about what negotiation looks like in a relationship. My role as a program facilitator is to basically pull out the answers that they already know. They already know this stuff, but it's the influence that where it is that came from. Whoever the influencer is that's teaching them these ways of understanding what this part of the text means is the reason why they're basically trying to use these texts to justify their actions. But when we delve deep into the particular text, when it says God saw that Adam needed a partner, therefore created him a partner. So we highlight the text of partnership and what that looks like in a relationship. And it really does shift their way of thinking. There's no aim to remove their belief in the Bible, but help them to understand what that interpretation means, because the Bible is harmless, but it depends on what part of the text you pull apart that helps fit your way of justifying your behavior. That's the dangerous part. But they are testimonies and stories that of people's lives, and that's how people are interpreting specific texts. They'll pull a specific text to say, "See, this is what it means. This is why I do what I do, because this is what it says in the Bible," rather than exploring the whole interpretation and what the meaning of that text is about. So it's really good to hear when men talk, bring out specific texts of the Bible. I don't pull them out. They bring it out themselves. And we have open discussions about it and ask what that means. And it's a very interesting space to be in. It's really good for me to learn from a male abuser's perspective. These are our Pacific Island men who only know what they know.
Have you seen a change since having Talanoa with Pacific Island men about family harm and domestic violence? And is there a willingness to change and see a different point of view?
I believe for men who generally, especially our Pacific men, in specific sessions, I have observed that there's a bit of a surprise in terms of not knowing that what they're doing is wrong. I facilitated a program for one of the male abusers who was referred to a nonviolence program in relation to his assault to his partner in a public place. And a member of the public reported the assault to the police, hence how he ended up in the program. And he shared, I hit my partner because she's my partner. And so a lot of the men in the room would agree. And we'd have open discussions that to hear what their reasons are, because it's my right. She's my partner. And what issues I have with her is nobody else's business. And this is a Samoan man who is also he's a Christian person, but he doesn't know any better. He doesn't know any more than what he's been taught. It wasn't until we explored types of behaviors and abusive behaviors and exploring what the language of love looks like. Is it hurtful? Is it abusive? The more we delve deep into these conversations, the more they started to learn. So a lot of our, especially our male Pacific people who have just migrated from overseas, have only just discovered and learned about types of behaviors that are unacceptable. They believe that it's not abuse, that they're just their way of disciplining a woman or their partner because she didn't do what she's told. And in their upbringing, they believe that that's just a normal thing.
How do you change mindsets? How do you change generations into understanding what love really looks like and breaking those patterns of violence when, I guess, it is normal? But when it comes to women in relationships, we know that it's a huge issue in Aotearoa, New Zealand, possibly arguably even bigger in a lot of our Pacific Island countries as well. And so how do you change that? You've mentioned that this program helps people specifically who have been referred on to the police, but is there a bigger conversation that we need to be having here?
A lot of our male Pacific people probably have never had the opportunity to talk about their upbringing talk about the trauma that they experienced in their lives growing up, talk about the influence or being told that you boys just take it by the chin and deal with it. A lot of these men suppress their issues because they've been taught that they need to just deal with it. And that women were taught, basically seen as the weaker ones, because they show emotion. They show more emotion than men do. And it is the influence from society. It's the influence from your cultural upbringing. It's the influence from whoever in your family or your strong leader that shaped your understanding and your beliefs as to what's brought you to today. Storytelling, exploring of the world in these program sessions, rather than just getting them to define what family violence is, we need to delve deep through conversations, through cultural frameworks, understanding what these values look like to us as Pacific people, and specifically in your own ethnic space too. And learning about the languaging, because a lot of the biblical texts and how they've been interpreted, they can be misinterpreted depending on their own idea or definition of the use of language.
Transparency International Papua New Guinea says the government has to let the public know about its plans for a gold refinery and mint. The scheme in the pipeline for several years is understood to offer a Singaporean company with Australian principals sweeping controls over the gold produced in the country. Few details have been released, but it's understood the government would own a substantial slice of the company. Don Wiseman asked spokesperson for TIPNG, Peter Aitsi, whether the government's not being transparent in the dealings over its proposed National Gold Corporation Bill.
Yes, I think that's the general view from our community and parts of business as well, that this proposal seems to have had some political push, and it's been less than transparent in terms of the details around the activity and also details around the individuals involved.
So what would TI's message be to the government?
I think the message is always consistent, and that is, if there is a public good or if there's a public benefit in this, then it should be an open process. There should be broader consultation with the various stakeholders that will be impacted by such a bill. And so clearly that type of consultation has been absent. So it draws suspicion in terms of the intentions and actions of the government, in particular those that are driving it. That being the Prime Minister and I think the Finance Minister.
Why do you think there is secrecy surrounding it?
Look, I think it's for those parties to answer, but clearly from a community point of view, it's not acceptable. If there is a public good, then demonstrate it through an open public process and robust debate, because what they're asking for here is essentially the state to take 50% of this corporation, and that requires public monies to be used. So, we as taxpayers are clearly have the right to ask the question, is this the best use of taxpayers' money while our health system is being, challenged? The public infrastructure that we have access to continues to deteriorate, and our education system is breaking at the seams because of poor classrooms and lack of teachers and growing numbers of kids going to school. So, I think this is why, there's growing concern and anger over this particular proposal.
The three Pacifica rugby teams in the Super Rugby competition will be in action across Fiji and Australia this weekend. Fijiana Drua women will be fighting to create history by winning their third consecutive Super W title when they battle the Waratahs in Brisbane on Sunday. But before that, Moana Pasifika will be battling Fijian Drua in Nautoka on Saturday. Eliasa Tora has more.
The Fijian and Drua women are in Brisbane for their third grand final since 2022. Although they lost to the Waratahs in the round-robin series earlier this year, head coach Mosese Roluni says he believes the team that turns up and plays the full 80 minutes will win the final clash.
It was a very heavy loss, and I think the girls have learnt from that. Playing at home, you've got to do the hard work before anything happens. So that day we were way off the mark, and I think they've developed really well. And as I said before, New South Wales has been the benchmark team for the whole competition, and everyone's felt their wrath. So obviously a grand final, a different story. It's whoever turns up. You know, you've got to be on song for the 80 minutes. If you're not, you know, there's no second chances.
While there were concerns that the team missed out on 11 points against the Force because their kickers were off target last weekend, Raluni says he has faith that the circumstances will change this weekend.
I've got all the faith in the world in the kicking. You know, you go through the season, probably had a little bit off day and, you know, cost us 11 points. But that's gone. That game's gone now. We move forward and, you know, I know they've been focusing on the job ahead. And, you know, New South Wales is the next job. So they've been practicing and practicing hard. So I've got all the faith in the world in them.
Meanwhile, both Moana Pacifica and the Fijian Roa will be battling to win Saturday's game and confirm their placings in the top eight. Moana's assistant coach Tom Coventry says they expect nothing less than a tough 80 minutes.
It's a big match for us, considering the table. So both teams are on the same amount of points. We're both 7th and 8th respectively, us being 8th. And the only difference between the two teams is a points differential. So both teams will be gunning for the win. It can help us in our goal to try and achieve, which is making the top 8. It's a big challenge for us and it'll be a good match.
He says they do not want to be another casualty to the Drua, who have won 3 out of 4 home matches this year.
It'll be tough. I think that'll steel them up. I thought they played well against the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes, obviously, the form team in the competition, but they certainly didn't disgrace themselves, in my opinion. They're a tough team. They're very innovative. They come up with new players regularly, and at home, they, you know, they've proven they've been really hard to beat. So we're going to try our best to make sure we're not one of their casualties.
Drua head coach Mick Byrne understands the importance of getting a win and stopping Moana from securing a bonus point.
It's massively important game for us. As I said, we are in the 8, so we've got to keep winning. And then there's bonus points and all that. This is the beauty of this competition we play in. There's bonus points that are part of your success, and there's points differential that gets taken into it as well. So that if you get in front of a team that you're fighting for a finals position, you don't want to let them have a bonus point either. So that makes this game very, very important.
But he understands it will not be an easy walk in the park, as Moana have proven their physicality as a big weapon so far this year.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, to Fa Sui Fua.